Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And a reminder to those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Can you answer the question, what famous Democrat was opposed to the minimum wage? Well, you'll have the answer at the end of this first half hour. Bill Wattenberg stopping by to tell us how he has found a way to stop runaway hijacked tanker trucks. And the scientists in Mountain View, California at SETI want us to help them name the moons of Pluto. But right now, let's get to today's guest. What do you say?
Well, at the IEEE Homeland Security Conference, there was a lot of really great presentations. And one in particular was by Melissa May. She's the Senior Director of Strategic Planning for a company called NetBio, and it has to do with DNA analysis and that sort of thing. We managed to catch up with Melissa, and she's our guest on the program today. Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Now then, rapid DNA analysis, and why is this going to revolutionize the field of DNA forensics?
Sure. Well, the key takeaways to understand the impact that rapid DNA analysis will have is that, first of all, it's rapid, so it can process DNA profiles in less than an hour and a half, which is really, really pretty revolutionary. Generally, in traditional DNA analysis technologies, it can take anywhere from 8 to 12 hours to process a sample.
Right.
Oftentimes, with backlogs, it can take anywhere from weeks to months to generate the profiles that are needed. So rapid DNA analysis has a couple key features that are really going to change the way in which DNA technology can have impact. First of all, it's rapid. It can process DNA profiles in under 80 minutes. It's designed to be taken out of a laboratory infrastructure and into the field, and it can be operated by non-technical users. What that means is that instead of having a big laboratory infrastructure with several pieces of very expensive equipment where you need PhD scientists and people who have been highly trained and are very skilled in working in a laboratory, we've eliminated that need. And so what you can do with this technology is you can take it out, you can put it into the hands of law enforcement agencies, military soldiers, customs and border personnel, and these are people who have real jobs to do every day. And so understanding the science and the techniques behind processing DNA is not going to be what their day job is. What they're going to be able to do is use this technology to hopefully identify individuals that they have concerns about and possibly link them to crimes that they have committed. And it can be done, again, outside of the laboratory, in a field environment by non-technically trained staff, and you can develop these DNA profiles in less than an hour and a half, which is really critically important to get kind of real-time information about the people that you have detained.
Well, DNA forensics, of course, have been somewhat costly, so much so that a lot of police agencies won't do it for misdemeanors or for minor crimes or something like that, only for something really major, because it does take long to get it done, and so that, of course, runs the cost up and that sort of thing. So what you're saying is that the methods that you're talking about right now with DNA analysis are going to be rapid, and that's going to get the price down, too, to make it more affordable for, say, smaller crimes and that sort of thing. How does that work?
Well, so I think in the long term, definitely bringing price down is something that we need to do. Rapid DNA technologies currently right now are equally, if not slightly more expensive than the traditional technologies, in that these are all kind of in early development process, I'm sorry, in the early commercialization. So as volumes go up, as they're used more and more, prices will come down and even match or possibly exceed what you would pay for in private laboratory testing.
Now, your organization, NetBio, you make the equipment for this rapid DNA testing, you don't actually run the labs, do you? You supply the equipment to the labs so that they can do the rapid testing, is that right?
That's correct. No, so what we have done is we are really the research and development house of an instrument that we call the ANDI system. So the ANDI system is the size of about a large microwave. It weighs about 50 kilos. Inside of the instrument are all of the different pieces of equipment that are required to process DNA. So the instrument is the first part. The second part is a biochip set. So what we have done is we've created a lab on a chip. So we've integrated all the processes that need to happen in a lab in order to generate a DNA profile, which includes DNA purification, PCR amplification, and then separation and detection. And then the third component of this is a buccal swab, or I'm sorry, it's a swab in which you use to collect the sample from the individual. So to be very clear about rapid DNA, the current way in which it will be implemented is to collect reference samples. And what that means is you have a known person, and you collect their DNA from them directly, and then you run it in the rapid system. The system is currently not, it's not designed to really process crime scene samples or low copy touch sample DNA in its current capability or in its current form factor. So the way in which you'd use the rapid system, whether it be in a booking agency or out in a field deployed area for the military, is you simply collect a buccal sample from a person of interest, you load the buccal sample into the system, and the biochip set can actually accept 5 buccal samples at one time, so it processes those 5 samples simultaneously. You then just load the biochip set into the instrument, and you shut the door. Shutting the door initiates the run, and then in about 80 minutes, you'll get a DNA profile. On board of the instrument is a expert system software. That expert system software processes all the data, designates the allele calls, and generates the DNA profile that can then be used to search against a database, whether it be a local database of crime scene samples, or maybe a terrorist database, or some other kind of criminal database that exists currently. And then the idea is if you have this person in your custody and you're able to know within an hour and a half whether or not they are wanted for a crime or a terrorist act, and rather than having to go through the process of releasing them and finding them again after the fact, you have them in your custody and you can then link them to that crime and detain them.
All right. That's fascinating stuff. Since police agencies can only hold somebody for a certain length of time without charging them, cutting down the amount of time that it takes to test the DNA is going to be an extremely valuable and powerful tool. Now, when is this tool going to be available, and who is going to buy it first? Will the labs be buying it first, or will Homeland Security law enforcement agencies be buying it first, or how is it going to be distributed?
Sure. So I'll answer that in two parts. First, we already have 5 instruments that have been handed over to the government sponsors, the people who sponsored the development of the ANDI system. So DOD has 3 instruments, FBI has 1, and NIST has 1 on behalf of the Department of Homeland Security for test and evaluation. So that's kind of our first step forward, is getting through the test and evaluation process with the sponsors. The second part of that is NetBio has recently partnered with GE Healthcare. GE Healthcare is going to be involved in the commercialization in terms of marketing, sales, distribution, servicing of the instrument, and their focus is the law enforcement community. So in terms of when the instrument will be ready, we've made the announcement that of the partnership, and we've launched the system. We're expecting quarter one of 2013, the instruments will be delivered to anyone who wants to place an order.
All right, so what will happen, the FBI will have access to it, these other agencies you were talking about, and that means local police agencies or sheriff's departments or something like that will still do what they've done for years, and that's go through the FBI lab, at least temporarily. Is that right?
Well, so the idea right now is, the way in which the vision of the FBI exists is to roll these out in a kind of a very controlled manner, mm-hmm. in which... there are rules and regulations and policies and laws that, of course, regulate DNA and DNA profile and the capability to do search and match on a database. And it's very important because you want to understand the quality of the data that's coming out of any technology before you use it to associate someone with a crime. So, the first phase of this is really going to be doing some prototyping. I'm sorry, the first phase of this is really going to be doing some pilot studies with law enforcement. Getting them used to using the technology, getting some feedback from them in terms of ease of use, what works with their systems and their workflow processes, and if, are there any improvements that we should make. And then the second part is going to be going into what's called the validation. The validation is really going to be driven by a group called SWGDAM, who sets the guidelines for DNA and is looking at how to implement rapid DNA and how they can amend or alter their existing guidelines and quality assurance standards so that it makes sense for rapid technologies, because rapid technologies are very different than what's going on in the lab, in that things are fully integrated and there's not, you know, humans in the loop as much handling processes and transporting things from step to step. So once the quality assurance guidelines have been examined and amended so that they apply to rapid, then we can go through what's called a validation, which means people are going to, you know, internally at NetBio, we'll do a big study on the quality and the and how the instrument performs. And then the individual forensic labs will also do some validation and assessment of instrument performance and reliability. Once that happens, then we can move to a state in which the instrument will become accredited by ENDIS, which is the National DNA Indexing System. Once it's an accredited instrument, then the profiles that it generates can be used to search against the CODIS system, whether it be local, state, or national. So early on, the capability to search against these databases, you know, the national forensic databases, doesn't exist. So, you know, again, the pilots are going to be really important in terms of understanding usability. And, of course, initially, you know, some people do have local databases that are not hooked into the national system that, that they use to kind of control their casework and do some of the own, their own search and evaluation against or search and match against DNA profiles. So there is some initial use cases that exist out there, and we are certainly working with these people very closely, these organizations very closely. But in terms of being able to connect into the national system, you know, we're on a year to year and a half, maybe 2 year timeline. That's really an FBI question more than anything else. But we're going to get there, and you know, we have confidence in the quality of the data that the system is generating, and it's just going to be a matter of going through, jumping through the hoops, and checking all the boxes and ensuring that, you know, we meet the standards that are set by the SWGDAM Committee on Rapid DNA.
Yeah, that was going to be my my next question, is how fast you got to get this this implemented. I mean, we've had problems before with people faking the data, fabricating DNA stuff. They get into court and convict people, and later on we find out that somebody has had manipulated the data for whatever particular reason there is. And I see where certification and the double checking is a vital thing, and especially if you're speeding up the process, because it is no fun convicting innocent people and letting the bad guys go free. So we're looking maybe a year and a half, 2 years of maybe some field testing and things like that, and then it looks like something that that after it's we know it's truly reliable, we expect it's going to be a pretty common thing. Is that right?
Well, that's what we're hoping. You know, that's where we're placing our bets. We're hoping that it will get out into every major booking station, you know, across the U.S. and across the world. You know, GE definitely wants to take this technology not only within the U.S. itself, but globally. And in addition, you know, one added value of a technology like this, because of its speed, is that when you have a person of interest that's a part of an investigation, this can also be used to exonerate them, to eliminate them as a suspect. Because if you have crime scene evidence in a database, and you have a person of interest, and you can take their reference sample right there in the booking station while you're questioning them, and it comes back that it doesn't match the case in which you were bringing them in to investigate for, why proceed further? You can do that in real time, and there's no need to continue to stretch out an investigation for weeks or months and derail progress by, you know, chasing down an individual who clearly wasn't involved or didn't have evidence or leave behind any evidence at the crime scene. So we're hoping that, you know, not only is it going to help bad guys, help catch bad guys, but it's also going to help eliminate people of interest early on to let investigators focus on next steps and kind of move forward with an investigation in a more effective and efficient way.
Yeah, the speed and convenience of being able to do this and do it accurately will drive the cost down of law enforcement all over the board, because you're saving man hours, you're saving investigators' grief, you're saving paperwork, you're saving all kinds of different things. So I can see where this is really going to be quite a boon. And you answered another question for me. You say GE wants to take it, is going to want to take it internationally too. So I presume that it's going to be used, around the world, wherever there's suspects of terrorism and maybe make its way to Interpol in Paris and some of the other places. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, there are many different applications to this technology. As a matter of fact, I think almost every time we go out and talk to somebody, we learn a new application.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of law enforcement, we've talked about that, but I get, there's really two things. One is when you have a suspect, you want to detain them. There are many different applications for rapid DNA analysis. The first of which is law enforcement, which we just talked about. It has many applications in terms of, for example, reducing recidivism. There are certainly bad guys out there who commit rapes and murders, but they also commit lots of other crimes like burglary or drug dealing, arson, whatever it may be. And they're in and out of jail and in and out of being arrested for various crimes. So being able to generate a DNA profile and search it against unsolved crimes while being held at the law enforcement agency will allow criminals to be linked to their crimes and get them off the streets much earlier. And I can give just an anecdotal example. There was a study by City of Chicago which looked at 8 violent criminals. And that study determined that if DNA can be collected at the time of arrest, 60 violent crimes, including 53 murders and rapes, could have been prevented. Again, if they had used DNA at the time of the early arrest of these 8 individuals that they were looking at. So if you extrapolate that out beyond rape and murder to other violent crimes, robbery, kidnapping, arson, carjacking, whatever else, there's many, many out there. The number of crimes that could potentially be prevented really could be staggering. You think of all the crimes that exist out there, and if you can catch these bad guys early on, there's a lot of potential there to prevent a lot of crime. Another application is for the military, and it's very similar to what you think about in terms of law enforcement. But again, it's having, there are people who are detained, there are people who are a part of an investigation, there are people who are coming onto bases. And so the military, too, wants to identify if an individual they've captured is associated with a crime or a terrorist event. There's all kinds of things happening that the U.S. military has to deal with, from, IEDs exploding to drug trafficking, piracy, all kinds of nefarious activities. So rapid DNA analysis can provide near real-time identification to support U.S. military activities. And the same application to U.S. borders. You have people coming across all the time that are associated with crimes, whether they committed in the U.S. or in other parts of the world. But we don't want to let these bad guys across the borders, and we want to identify when we have them if they're associated with a crime. Another application that is really interesting to think about is one in which Department of Homeland Security is very interested in, mm-hmm. is verification of familial relationships.
Oh, yeah.
And again, there's several applications here, but one that's really important is when it's applied to refugees who are seeking asylum. They're able to bring in family members who are often in refugee camps and have no legal documentation to verify relationships. So there's a very time-intensive and labor-intensive process to validate and verify these claimed familial relationships. So being able to verify genetically that two people are related can help to expedite this process and reunite families and provide them with refuge in the United States in a more efficient and time-sensitive way, and will provide more accurate results. There are people who abuse the system, of course, and they sell, they're selling these kind of family slots for thousands and even tens of thousands of dollars. So people who want to buy these slots, sometimes they're just people who have money and want access to the United States to escape persecution. But in many other cases, there are people who are trying to gain entry into the United States and citizenships for criminal and terrorist activity.
Yeah.
So being able to genetically verify that claimed family members are the real family members not only preserves the integrity of the system for those who truly need to seek refuge in the United States, but it will protect our country from nefarious people who are trying to exploit, our generosity and our systems here to gain access to our country to commit terrorist acts. And then also in terms of familial relationships, there's victim identification at mass disasters, and there's also issues with identifying and verifying familial relationships, both in terms of human trafficking and illegal adoption. So the applications for rapid DNA just continue to expand. The more people that we talk to, the more interesting ideas and concepts that we get of how rapid DNA could be deployed. So I think we're just really at the beginning stages of understanding the impact that this technology potentially has.
Yeah, gee, Melissa. I mean, wow, what fascinating concepts there. I mean, we're really looking at tremendous strides in all sorts of different areas. Well, before we get out of here, what have we missed? What do you want to cover, and what did you cover at the conference we haven't talked about here on the program yet?
We haven't spent a lot of time talking about the biochipset. The biochipset that we've developed is really, truly an innovation. It is a complete lab on a chip. It's designed to be stored at room temperature, so all the reagents on board have stability, which, again, when you're thinking in terms of traditional technology, when you have this big laboratory infrastructure, they have chemical refrigerators, they have all kinds of pipettes and instrumentation that have to be out on a bench and in controlled, you know, temperatures and humidity. So this kind of lab on the chip that we've created on this plastic injection molded biochip set is really our biggest innovation. And it is truly integrated in that the only thing the user has to do is insert the samples. There's no loading of reagents. There's no connecting any tubes. You simply insert the samples. You place it into the instrument, and you shut the door, and you get a profile in about 83 minutes. So we're very proud of that invention, and it's come a long way. We've been working on it for many years now, and you know we think that we've crossed all the developmental barriers, and we're ready to take this live.
Lab on a chip, yes, we've talked about that several times on this program, and it's interesting to see the development of lab on a chip over the past several years. Well, Melissa, put on the meditation cap for just a minute and look deep into the future and give us some sort of a prediction. This could be frivolous or it could be something very serious. What do you see 5 years, 10 years, 50 years down the road? Do you have a prediction for us?
So I'll stick to my technology space and what I understand, but what I do predict is not only will instruments like the rapid DNA analysis system be deployed and move out into the hands of non-technical users, but I think you're going to see that across a variety of different technologies. I think you're going to see it in the medical community, where you're having technologies that are becoming so easy to use and so lightweight and portable that they're moving out into the hands of non-technical users or to the patients or the customers. I think that you're going to see technologies that are big and complicated become smaller and lighter and easier to use, and they'll move out into the hands of the clinicians. So I think that the concept of rapid DNA and its ease of use and its ability to be pulled out of a laboratory environment is going to translate out to all different kinds of technologies, especially within the medical community.
All right, Melissa, how about a word of wisdom, something that you you learned later that you wish you would have learned younger, some mentor maybe passed on to you, so this is the way to really be happy and get along in life. What word of wisdom can you share with us today?
So I guess the best advice I've ever been given was, in any organization you work in, keep knocking on doors until you hear yes. So previous to this, I worked in the Pentagon, and there's so many layers of bureaucracy, and it's so difficult to get things done. But I learned that if you knock on enough doors, you will get the answer that you're looking for. That's really how you drive and move things forward.
All right. Melissa Bay, the Senior Director of Strategic Planning at NetBio, on the fascinating subject of rapid DNA analysis in the future, what's ahead for us in law enforcement and relative identification and all sorts of different things. You've been a fascinating guest. I really appreciate so much you being with us, and thank you. Thank you again.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a great opportunity to talk about rapid DNA.
Okay. As we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today? Why, look at this. It's Woodrow Wilson running for president in 1912, talking against the minimum wage as a Democrat?
There is a plank in the program which speaks of establishing a minimum or a living wage. Perhaps we are justified in assuming that the third party looks forward to the general establishment by law of a minimum wage. It is very likely, I take it for granted, that if a minimum wage were established by law, the great majority of employers would take occasion to bring their wage scale as nearly as might be down to the level of that minimum. And it would be very awkward for the working man to resist that process successfully, because it would be dangerous to strike against the authorities of the federal government.